Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's the 23rd of December, 1991. A blizzard falls over Stockholm, keeping its traffic to a standstill. 100 kilometres away, a car has crashed in a ditch, and three bank robbers are fleeing from it. The police don't know the identities of the men they're chasing. But Stefan Thunberg did.
Hi, my name is Stefan Thunberg. I'm the co-author of The Father. I'm also a screenwriter in Sweden, but most of all, I'm the fourth brother who follow robbery after robbery from the inside.
Hi, I'm Anders Roslund, co-author of The Father. Today I'm a best-selling author, but back then when all this happened, I was still a TV reporter at the biggest news station in Sweden, and it was my job to cover this three-year-long period of brutal madness.
Together they are Anton Svensson, and this is Made in Sweden, the six-part podcast about the incredible true story that inspired their novel The Father. I'm Ed Wood, and this is a family tale like no other. Episode 2, Joining a Gang. In the first part of Made in Sweden, we heard about four brothers who grew up in the shadow of a violent father and learnt a criminal culture that would come out in the gang they formed a decade later. Here I've got one of those brothers, Stefan, who wasn't part of the gang. So how did your brothers go from being construction workers in a family business to being bank robbers?
In the beginning of the 90s, it was a very bad economical situation in Stockholm, in Sweden. My brother started this construction company, and my younger brother was coming to him, start working for him. In the beginning, it went well, you know, plenty of jobs and things like that. But then the job get fewer and fewer. And, you know, as a gang, my youngest brother was Vincent. He was 17 years old. And my oldest, Leo, he was 23 or 22 in reality. And they had this company and they had not so much job. And they start, you know, as you do in that age, talking about what can we do. Somebody make a joke about if we had weapons, we could rob a bank. And my experience is that a lot of young men are talking about things like this, but everybody don't take the step and do it. But I think my oldest brother, he is that kind of guy who, when he hear a joke like that, he say, okay, let's do it.
Maybe when you're 10, not when you're 20.
Now maybe, but you know, we are maybe not so mature in Sweden, I don't know. but they did. In that company, on a Friday, over a beer and a pizza, they talk about, can we make a hit? Where can we get weapons? Where can we make hits? Where can we, you know, rob a bank? You know, start talking, small words in the beginning. Maybe joke, I don't know. But if you have, like my oldest brother Leo in the book, and he sit with at that table, and somebody say, make a joke about to rob a bank, for example. And my oldest brother say, let's do it. Because that's the way he is. He's the one who say, let's do it. Do you see what I mean? It's because everybody can talk about it, but
he would always do things.
Yeah, maybe he was tired of.
But you weren't there.
No, because I was always welcome to my brother because we had this strong bonds between us. So I could always come to my oldest brother's apartment in Stockholm, you know. The door was always open for me.
Did you feel like an outsider, though?
Yeah, in a sort. But, you know, I didn't want to be a carpenter. And I want to be an artist. So in the beginning, I didn't know that they talk about Rob Banks. But, you know, one day, I remember when I understand that, I start to hear them talk about to really do it. And, you know, for me, it was not a question of, you know, talk with him and say, don't do that, because that was not the way we were, you know, that was not the way we were close to each other. We didn't talk about, you know, don't do that, brother. If you want to do that, do it. But
even criminal acts?
Yes, because it, you know, for us, it was not like the normal and the abnormal was so close to each other because the childhood, the how we had grown up, I think. Do you see what I mean?
The influence of your father.
And the circumstances.
And this was in 1990 we're talking about?
No, 91.
Yes. So in 1991, your brothers carried out their first robbery.
Yes.
This hit on an armoured car.
Yes.
And that's something incredibly vividly described in the novel.
Yeah.
Let's hear some of that now.
You open door. It takes 3 seconds to empty 30 bullets out of the magazine of a submachine gun. The 5 shots through the van window that Jasper had just fired took half a second, but it had felt so much longer. You open or you die. Leo stood on the bonnet of the van with his gun aimed at the security guard in the driver's seat, while Jasper beat the muzzle of the submachine gun against the partially broken safety glass, until the second guard, who was lying on the floor, lifted his arms over his head. Samuelson looked at Lindeyen, at his neck, at the blood flowing from it. He'd never thought about how red blood is when it's fresh. He'd got up, arms above his head, opened the door on the passenger side, and let in the masked man from the bonnet of the van, who now stood inside the cab, aiming a gun against his temple and speaking in broken English, asking him to unlock the safe. He tried to explain, but he couldn't find the words, not in English. He wanted to explain that from now on the safe door was locked, and that it could only be opened with a code held at headquarters. He searched for words that just weren't there, while the masked man listened and waited, so quiet and restrained. Not like the other one with the desperate voice, who'd fired through the window. This was the face that made the decisions, that was clear, even as the muzzle pressed a little harder against his temple. Lindeyen was slumped down in the driver's seat, blood running down his neck. The hand that belonged to that self-controlled face searched through the pockets of Samuelson's trousers, jacket and shirt, searching for and then finding his keys. And the desperate one screamed and shoved the gun against his chest. Start engine! The muzzle of the gun moved from his forehead to his mouth, into it. You start or I shoot! The gun was between his lips and against his tongue as he leaned against the keypad, 4 digits needed to start the engine. I kill! I kill! I kill! Samuelson's hand had lost all feeling, his fingers hard to manoeuvre as he punched in the code, turned the key and started the truck again. Jasper drove slowly up the steep loading ramp and across the pavement towards the turning area and the car park exit. No one had noticed 5 shots, muffled by the walls surrounding the loading bay and then disintegrating into the soundscape of the city. A few metres up from the loading ramp, life went on as if nothing had happened.
Hearing that, Stefan, does it still shock you, the level of violence that your brothers were able to use?
You don't understand the level of violence if you aren't there. In the moment, I think. I remember, for example, when I come home to my oldest brother that night after the armed truck hit, I remember I come into the living room and I saw the telly was on. And on the telly they reported about this armed car. And in the same time, they talk about that robbery. You know, they talked about these intensive minutes in that car. So I come into the living room and I saw on the telly and I hear them talk about it. And in one way, I feel outside because they have done something that I haven't done. So I just listen to them and I feel outside in some way. And in that moment, when I could hear them talk about it, then I could feel the adrenaline in the room and, you know, and they were so...
Lifted. They were up.
Up of it. They were high on the adrenaline and the violence, and I could feel and I could remember that I really wanted to be a part of that, to feel that highness, that adrenaline after, and be a part of this, you know, this group.
And you talk about the TV report. People presumably all around Sweden were watching these reports. Yes. About a gang having robbed an armored car. And Anders Roslund, you were a TV news reporter covering crime at that time.
I was covering crime at this particular time when it all changed in Sweden, those intense years when we faced new types of crimes, new types of criminals that we were not prepared for and had to deal with. And me working with that was, I was in the middle, in the heart. This was the time when the gangs were created. There was one gang, only one gang, Hells Angels. And then there was another one, Bandidos. We had two gangs. But with all that problems in the early 90s with the economics, and we had suburbs full of people without jobs. The unemployment was more than 50%. More than 50% of the ninth graders were finishing school without grades. And so there were more gangs created at that point. Not those two. If you couldn't belong to Hells Angels or Bandidos, you had to create your own gang. This was the time when this happened, and the reports about this was on my behalf. It was also the time when we, for the first time, saw a man walking around the Stockholm streets, actually shooting and killing other people night after night if they were immigrants. We had to deal with that, and it created a lot of questions in society because we were the role model. It was the time when we saw our first modern mass murder. It was a morning when a man in a, after a fight of really started with jealousy, killed seven people, and that sort of shook our nation. It was the time, just a few weeks after, when a man firing wildly among him at Stureplan, which is where everybody meet at night, having a good night, and killed a lot of people. And that was the time when we saw this group, the faceless group of bank robbers, another kind of crime we had never seen before, was not prepared for, but demanded us to sort of understand what was going on, and that was my job to report about that.
And did you understand them? Did you say they're entirely new? Did you understand what they were about, where they were coming from?
No, they were raising the bar for violence forever. Sort of the criminal act was sort of considered a new thing. So facing all those new types of crimes and new criminals in such an intense period, 2-3 year long, the gangs mobilizing, the laser man killing immigrants, our first mass murder, we also, for the first time, saw the tracks of these faceless bank robbers that for 3 years should sort of hold our nation at ransom, the whole country. And that was a group of bank robbers known slowly as the Military League. And they were unlike everything we had seen, since they raised the bar of violence. And they did that with weapons nobody knew were out there. Because they began the long trip shaking our fears with blowing up an entrance to a military armory, and committing Northern Europe's largest weapons heist ever, stealing 221 automatic weapons. And they did that so cleverly that it was discovered
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's Amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
6 months later.
Yeah, but I really want to go back a little bit to that first time when I come home to my brother and when they have done their first hit against this armed truck. Because I want to talk about that moment a little bit more, because this was, you know, the first time they did it, you know, and I could feel what I talked about earlier was that I could feel the feeling in the living room, you know, hear them talking, and I they had crossed this line together, and I just sit there listening and feeling left out in some kind of way. But I remember one of them took out this empty fishbowl and put it on the table. And they took the money from the hit and put it into the fishbowl. And one of them said that 1 million don't take a big place. You can fill a fishbowl with 1 million kronor. You know, it's so. And in that moment, I could even feel the disappointment of them not taking as much money as they could have, because inside that truck, behind a sealed door, they had to leave like 9 million kronor because they couldn't force that door because they hadn't enough time to do that. So they had to leave this 8-9 millions together with these two traumatized guards and escape from the police. In that moment, I realized that they're going to rob a bank again. They're going to rob again and again and again till they come over the big money, the big hit, you know, like 20, 25 millions. Because that was the goal of this, you know, to make a lot of money and then disappear from the criminal map forever. And nobody should know anything about it. Keep it in the family, make 1, 2, 3 hits, disappear. That was the plan.
And did the media, did the police know this was the start of something at the time? What did you think as a TV reporter that night?
That night was a very violent hit, and it was an unusual hit, but it was just one hit against one armed truck. And nobody had a clue that this would continue, was supposed to be added to other hits.
And what did you feel? Personally, were you scared? Were you interested as a reporter?
As a reporter, you sort of always, I think police officers and reporters are sort of the same. Something happens at the TV station or at the journalistic place. When a bad thing happens, people are sort of happy. And that's not because they're crazy people. It's suddenly the work has a purpose. And you have to inform, to report about this as good as you can, because the audience out there needs information. They need information and they need to understand. So suddenly you have a purpose. So you feel some sort of energy. And that energy is the same energy as a police officer feels chasing a bad guy. Because we are all waiting for good or bad stuff. And unfortunately, it's often bad stuff that kicks our you know, souls.
And this is coming out of a situation where you mentioned there'd been immigration from Yugoslavia, where there was civil war at the time. There was essentially a troubled feeling in Sweden at that moment. It was becoming more dangerous. Did that first robbery feel like part of that to you, Anders? Or did it feel like a one-off? Did it feel like part of a pattern of crime or as a one-off?
At that point, it was just a part of those four or five odd new crimes that we'd never faced. People shooting other people on the streets as the laser man. The gang building Hells Angels coming to our country. It was one new odd thing that we had to face, because this was when everybody was have troubling with the money, the economics. At that point, it was just another proof that this country is going in the wrong direction. But we didn't know that that one hit was supposed to last for 3 years, a hunt after faceless robbers.
No. And what they didn't know either was that in that living room, when they started planning the next robbery, the plan was to do it better, with more violence, and to disappear better than anybody, any group, or any robber had disappeared from the crime scene before. It was, you know, that they started to plan the next robbery in that, yeah, almost directly after the first hit, because they hadn't get more money from it.
And Stefan, this boiling violence that Anders talks about in the suburbs, this sense of things coming to the boil, that was nowhere more true than in your father himself, the very person who'd essentially created this gang accidentally in childhood. Tell us a bit about his background.
Yeah, my father came from Yugoslavia, ex-Yugoslavia. He came to Sweden in 62. He was a refugee from Yugoslavia.
From the civil war?
No, from the, you know, in the 60s in Yugoslavia, it was a lot of political conflicts between, you know, Tito was a socialist, and you had a right wing from the war called Ustasha. It was from the Second World War, and it was a lot of conflicts in Yugoslavia after the Second World War that Tito was trying to handle. And in that conflict, my father was. I don't really know so much about my father, because my father, he didn't want to talk about his past. My father's past is a mystery for me. He never talked about it, because we talked about it then. And when we ask as kids, he just won't talk about it. He said, that's my life, you have nothing with that to do. You know, that was his attitude against. So when he escaped from Yugoslavia in 62, he came to Austria. And from Austria, his plan was to go to Australia, because a lot of Yugoslavians was going to Australia when they escaped from Yugoslavia. So, but he was out and he was drinking with his best friend Dan, and they missed the bus to Australia, so they have to take the bus to Sweden. That's the story. So he went to Sweden in 62, and he met my mother at this news Gröna Lund
amusement park
in Stockholm, and yeah, at the box, what do you call it, the boxing ball, the punch ball, yeah. She told me that she saw my father for the first time when he hit the punch ball, punching it so hard that the meter hit the roof, like. And after a while, she realized that he hit other things too, especially when he was drunk, when he was drinking alcoholic. So, but they met there and they get married. And so.
And what was their relationship like?
When he came to Sweden, he didn't want to talk about his past. He wanted to start something new. He wanted to start, build his own family, build his own clan. And in the beginning, my mother told me that he was, when he didn't drink alcoholic, he was a very, very, very good man in the beginning. He really wanted to do something right. But in the same time, if anybody said something wrong to him, he hit them. Like it, because that was his language. It was like, you don't arguing with him, you fight with him. If somebody arguing with him, he fight that guy. That was his way of thinking. But when he didn't do that, when he was trying to be a normal man in Sweden and with his firstborn child in the beginning, my mother told me that he really tried to be something good, but he couldn't handle that life, kind of life.
And in the novel, the relationship between Ivan, your father, and Britt Marie, your mother, is incredibly moving and upsetting in the way that seeing any form of emotional abuse, which is what we really see in the book, is. Let's hear a little bit of their relationship.
Britt Marie is still standing in the hallway as the door closes and steps disappear down the stairwell. Her legs try to bend and her body wants to collapse on the floor as if they just can't take any more drunken aggression. But they don't, because she's decided that they won't. Leo, Felix, Vincent, go to your rooms. And why should they do that? Because I want to talk to you, Ivan, alone. You, do you know what our son did today? Now, when Papa holds it up, she sees the jacket, one shoulder of which was facing the wall, with a broad scarf hanging over it. The hole is even bigger now. Even Papa's fingers can fit through it. He defended himself, us, our honor. Leo stood there facing a knife, for our sake. You can speak, Britt Marie, do it. But then you speak to us, all of us. We are a family. If you believe that your son did the wrong thing today, you tell him in front of all of us. Leo didn't do anything wrong, Ivan. Her legs won't give way because she's made a decision. You did something wrong. Me. Papa drops the jacket, but not his hand. I taught our son to defend himself. And if Hasse's father reports this to the police, he moves closer. For what? You threatened him, Ivan. There are no witnesses, right? He looks at her, at their three sons. Did anyone here hear me threaten Hasse's father? Any of you? Or is my wife the only cop in here? He looks at his eldest son the longest. Leo, did you? Did you hear that? And waits until he gets an answer.
No, Papa, I didn't hear anything. But I heard it, Ivan.
Mama is standing close to Papa, close to Papa's hand, but she doesn't care. I heard you threaten him, and I can repeat exactly what you said. Are you going to snitch on me? He moves his hand closer until it is almost touching her face. Snitch? Is that what you are going to do?
No, Papa!
Felix runs towards Papa and Mama and a hand that shakes in front of her face.
Papa, you can't! Papa!
You will never turn against my family again.
So we have this father figure, Ivan, who has come from a fled Yugoslavia. Other people were coming into the country, but other elements were coming into the country too. Crime elements were coming into Sweden at the time. What kind of effect was the conflict in Yugoslavia having on Sweden?
I don't think especially Yugoslavia was having an effect. I think we were trying to be an open country because we should be an open country. That's how it should work. And since we were quite unfamiliar with organized crime at that point, because we didn't have any gangs, a lot of different mafias were created in Stockholm City, fighting about the power. And of course, one of them was the Yugoslavian mafia, and that became very strong. They created their own rules for a while there. And I find it sort of as a strange thing to think about, that this is actually the same time that the civil war starts in Yugoslavia. The Yugoslavian mafia is starting here, and even Stefan's brothers, being half Yugoslavian, starting their civil war against the Swedish society.
And how did the, you mentioned there were various mobs, one of which was Yugoslavian, I'm sure there were other nationalities and probably Swedish as well. How did these mafia gangs react to the arrival of three young bank robbers who were aged, you know, around 20, the youngest 17? How did they react?
The thing is that they didn't react at all, because nobody knew about these guys. They were faceless. They were without criminal records. They were not known inside a prison or outside a prison. They were just unfamiliar. So it was slowly robbery after robbery they were taking that place. And I think there was a mix between competition and admiration. Every criminal sort of admires another if they actually complete such an intellectual robbery that this was. It was escapes full-ended. They were so, there were room enough for different gangs and room for this gang as well.
And let's not forget that this gang were basically kids. They were student age. They were, they, and you yourself were a student at the time. This is not hardened criminals, you know, in their 30s and 40s who have been doing this for decades. These are kids, really. And you, Stefan, could have been part of that.
Yes. Matter of fact, I asked my brother after that first robbery against that armed car, when I could, you know, I felt outside and I asked him if I could be in the next robbery, could be a part of it.
You asked to join the gang?
I asked my older brother Leo to join the gang.
And what did he say?
Okay.
Made in Sweden was presented by Ed Wood. The authors were Anders Roslund and Stefan Thunberg, and the producer was Gavin Osborne. The Father by Anton Svensson and published by Sphere is available from Waterstones and all other good bookshops. The audiobook, recorded and produced by Chatterbox Audio, is available from Audible now. The Made in Sweden podcast series was recorded at the RNIB Studios with post-production by Chatterbox Audio. This has been an Ashet Audio production.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real, frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.